Me Too is a movement. It's a movement about sexual harassment, but it's a movement about more than that. It's also about a reckoning in the workplace. It's a re-examination of the workplace and a call to change the power dynamics that sometimes lead to sexual abuse. We have three people today who dedicate their professional lives in different ways to understanding toxic work environments and how to dismantle them. Erica Clemens is the state director for 9to5. That organization runs a job survival hotline to give people answers, referrals, and support for improving policies and conditions at work. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
Celeste, also with us. It's okay. Marie Mitchell is with us as well. She's a professor of management at the University of Georgia's Business School. Hi, Marie.
Good morning.
And Joey Price joins us from D.C. He's the CEO of Jumpstart HR, a human resources consulting firm that's based in Baltimore. Hi, Joey.
Hi, Celeste.
Let's start with what Me Too is actually about, because people are confused now that allegations not only of sexual harassment and sexual assault have come to light, but also some of these accusations about bullying in the workplace. So, Erica, is bullying and aggressive behavior, is that completely a separate issue from sexual harassment?
Absolutely not. I think it's the same thing. It's a way of retaliating against workers. So it is a form of bullying. It's showing them that these people that are doing the sexual harassment has power. They're using their power to manipulate the workers however they want to manipulate them in the workplace.
And Joey, let me ask you the same question. Where does bullying come into this conversation? Do you think of it as a separate issue?
I think of it as a separate issue, but they stem from the same root. The root being power and influence, and not having a reasonable way to execute your goals or to get across what it is that you want done. So I think bullying can be separate, but with regard to sexual harassment, they both stem from the idea of using your power incorrectly.
Well, Marie, where does the law stand on this? Because there have been, even here in the public radio sphere, there have been people, high-level people, who have been accused of repetitive harassment that was not sexual in nature, but was a bullying in nature. Is there a difference in terms of the law when it comes to that kind of harassment?
Yeah, I believe there is. More and more, we're seeing incidents of employees who are pushing back about bullying, about their supervisors and others being overly aggressive with them physically as well as verbally, and that because it takes a psychological toll on individuals. It impacts their health and their well-being and ultimately the organization's productivity. And so I think, the court system is starting to recognize, that these types of behaviors are intolerable, but that's moving fairly slow by comparison to what has happened with sexual harassment, which has explicit definitions in law.
We got this tweet from Holly Taggart, who says, "To me, this is clearly about power, not sex. I have, however, been fortunate to work at many organizations that are not extremely male-centric, so my experience is thankfully limited." And just a reminder to listeners, you can weigh in on this at any time during this conversation. You know how to reach us on social media. It's at OST Talk on Twitter, or find us on Facebook. So, Erica, when we talk about the Me Too movement, let me play you this comment from Rebecca Traister, who published a piece in The Cut last week, a long piece. And the title of it was, "This moment isn't just about sex, it's really about work." So here she is speaking to MSNBC.
"For the first time in decades, in generations, we are taking these kinds of power abuses and sexual abuses seriously and putting them on the front pages of newspapers and talking about what they mean structurally as far as gender imparity and inequities."
Would it be fair to say that you have been aware of these issues for years? And if so, why have we suddenly started to take this seriously as a nation?
Yes, I think it has been going on for years, and folks have been aware of it. Being a union organizer, you hear about this on a day-to-day basis. Workers being sexually harassed, not having anyone to go to or talk to, and it is a form of empowerment. But I think what's happening now is women are, and some men are becoming more empowered to be out about it. They're seeing more support. It's not something necessarily that you would be shamed for, which is what I think has previously been happening in a workplace. So it's more about being empowered, more of having the support with this movement.
Marie, what do you think has changed? Because what we're seeing now are stories of sexual, of people who have committed sexual assault, sometimes harassment in the workplace, sometimes for decades. Employers have paid settlements on their behalf. So why now? What has changed?
I do agree that there is this sense of empowerment that is filtering through, that's allowing individuals to feel like they could have a voice that might be listened to. You know, I don't believe that all organizations do listen. I mean, research suggests that there are three primary reasons why people don't speak out and report. One being that they fear that they're going to be retaliated against because of complaining. Another is because they don't think anything's going to happen to the offender. Perhaps because they are a high power individual, perhaps because they're a high performer in the organization, or because they're just shielded and protected in various ways. And then the last is just that they don't believe that whatever they say is going to be taken seriously, that even the slightest sexual comment might be just discarded as humor, maybe comedy, maybe trying to make light of a person's sense of diminishment in some way. It's just really unfortunate because a lot of this goes back to individuals' just general innate beliefs about women and what women are supposed to do. It's supposed to be caring and taking care of others, whereas men are supposed to be the caregivers, the dominant personalities. And so I think sometimes employees take that a bit too far, and I'm proud of women for coming forward and expressing their voice, and men.
So then, Joey, let me take this to you, because you are a human resources consulting firm, and here in public radio, NPR's top news editor Michael Oreskes resigned in November. NPR reporter Maria Louise Kelly interviewed the CEO of NPR, Jarl Mohn, about how the organization handled earlier reports, sometimes years earlier, of sexual harassment committed by Oreskes. And here was Jarl Mohn's response.
The first, which occurred in the fall of 15, that was an internal situation that happened here. It was a terrible situation. I condemn his actions. They were unacceptable. They're deplorable. We investigated. We did it immediately. We involved our HR department. We involved our general counsel. We sat with Mike. We confronted him about that situation and put him on notice that this could not occur. And there's a whole range. I mean, there's a whole range of what is unacceptable behavior.
Joey, what has gone wrong in HR departments that have sometimes failed to protect employees from what we now know of as serial harassers?
Well, Celeste, let's back up a bit, because it's not an HR problem. Sexual harassment and the breakdown of execution, it's not an HR problem. It's a leadership problem, because leadership is the ultimate group within an organization that has the ability and capacity to say, this is not okay, and this is our position. And so if we back things up a bit, the first thing that an organization has to do is to take a position, because we create policy, but we don't enhance the position. We don't say, this is why it's not okay. This is why it's not okay to have a climate of sexual harassment or bullying in the workplace. And so regardless of whatever policies you create, whatever trainings you implement, if it's not reinforced with a why, then you will have significant breakdowns in the organization. You will attract people who will ignore the policy because the organization's position isn't as strong. And then you'll have an organization that either settles quietly or protects the offender because their position is not strong enough. So I think it goes all back to, what is the position of the organization, and are we really going to walk the walk and not just talk the talk?
But I've heard from many employees who say they don't take these things to HR because in the end, HR is there to protect the organization and management and not the employees. Is that a fair view?
Well, I understand how that may be the perspective of human resources professionals in the workplace. And to some degree, yes, HR's role is to protect the organization. However, with the laws that are in place and with policies that should be in place within an organization, protecting an organization also means and should mean protecting the people and protecting the greater good for an organization. So I think we misconstrue the notion of HR protecting the organization with HR protecting the key influencers and key power brokers within an organization. And that the latter should not be the case. It should be HR creating an environment where a person feels comfortable reaching out to the HR professional, HR having the processes, capabilities, and relationships to reach out to senior leaders in the organization to confront the issue, to reach out to attorneys, to reach out to outside investigators, all because it's the greater good of the organization. We earlier had a conversation
We're going to continue this in just a moment. We'll just take a real quick break. And again, we'll continue this conversation in a moment. You're hearing Joey Price, CEO of Jumpstart HR. Also with us is Erica Clemens, State Director of 9to5, and Marie Mitchell, Professor at the University of Georgia's Terry College of Business. And you can join this conversation. We want to hear your own stories and your own ideas on this. Find OST Talk on social media or call us. 404-500-9457. We'll continue in a moment. This is On Second Thought. I tried to drink it away. I tried to put one in the This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. Let's continue this conversation about workplace culture and what leads to sexual harassment. Joey Price is the CEO of Jumpstart HR in Baltimore. Erica Clemens runs the Georgia chapter of 9to5, an organization that helps people who are experiencing discrimination or abuse at work. And Marie Mitchell is with us. She studies organizational behavior and why behaving badly too often leads to promotion and success. So let's start again with a comment from writer Rebecca Traister, who had a long piece in The Cut about what the Me Too movement is evolving into. And here she is saying no woman is surprised by most of these allegations.
We could all sort of know that these guys were doing these things, but whenever people talked about it, it was laughed off, it was ignored. Sometimes it could be reported, it could exist as rumor, everybody could nudge each other, but it didn't matter. They kept on getting the jobs. They kept on getting elected. Again, that just happened.
So, Marie, in case this is a moment that is going to pass, in other words, that Me Too will be forgotten by mid-2018, what needs to change in order to change what Rebecca's talking about there? What needs to change in order to make it so that women don't have to wait 30 years to come forward?
Well, a lot has to happen. Within organizations, I do believe that HR, having worked in HR in the past, has to play a role, as well as leadership, in owning up to a new infrastructure that better facilitates, equality within the workplace, that better facilitates individuals feeling comfortable to come forward when inappropriate behavior occurs. And that includes sexual harassment, and that includes all levels of unethical behavior, such as fraud and corruption and abusiveness. That level of recognition by leadership is essential, and that level of commitment needs to happen within organizations and within society in general in order for us to move past this. And hopefully it doesn't die out.
So, Erica, there are people who are already saying that the number of allegations are so numerous that the Me Too movement is going to go too far and there'll be inevitable backlash. Is there, a danger here in the Me Too movement becoming vengeful?
No, I don't think there is a danger in this. I think right now in this moment, women are really feeling that they're being heard, that their voices are being uplifted. I think what we need to try to focus on now is more local, statewide legislation to help ensure that, you know, these are not happening. In Georgia, you know, it's so easy for you to be fired for sexual harassment. So finding those state passing legislation on a state level that gives workers more protection against that.
You mean it's easy to be fired after you've made claims that you've been sexually harassed, or you can be fired for any reason in Georgia?
In Georgia, right, correct.
Yeah.
So having more legislation around discrimination in the workplace. So once you report it, you have some type of protection. If it's not a unionized organization, it's harder for them to fight against what's happening to them in their workplace.
And the person they report it to is usually HR. And Joey, that brings me back to you. And I want to give you a chance to respond to a Oh, we just lost Joey. But I want to read a tweet from one of our listeners, and I guess Joey's not here to respond to it, but Tracy Maximilian says, I'm going to have to call BS on your guest. HR is there to protect the company and make any process so difficult for you that you will never seek their help again. Then they will say how great their workplace is because they don't get complaints. So Marie, when we're talking about specific changes that have to occur, is the HR the right place to start? Because Joey seems to think that it's not HR, it's actually the leadership itself.
Well, I think there's a common misconception that HR isn't part of organizational leadership, but it should be. It should be an individual at the table, and in many great organizations it is. And it's taken very seriously because, frankly, an organization is all human resources. There are its productivity and its level of energy and its sustainability come from the individuals who are within it. HR manages that aspect. And so, yes, it does start with HR, and it starts with, as he said, leadership being committed to providing not just the training, but the infrastructure that allows individuals to report voice. And I, you know, having taught at every single level at UGA, from undergrad to executive MBA, I've heard many stories of certain organizations having facilitated a climate from HR that is hostile, that employees feel that they are against them. But there are many great organizations out there where HR is their proponent, in addition to emphasizing the organization's goals. And so I think, yes, definitely, it does start with HR. It starts with training. It starts with recruiting. It starts with holding individuals accountable for appropriate behavior. It starts with, you know, reporting mechanisms and onward.
We only have about a minute left, but I think we have Joey back. And so, Joey, let me have you respond to this. We have another comment from Brian Greer who says, HR is there to make the company compliant with labor law and in most organizations recruit and retain talent. Their strongest motivator to address issues is rapid employee turnover. So in the less than minute that we have, Joey, how does one empower HR? How do you do that?
Well, you empower HR the way that you empower other departments within an organization. You commit to their success. You don't commit to their success through the lens of just addressing the issues of compliance, but you think about HR's goals and how can you make HR position itself to be successful in the greater good for the business strategy. So often you will have at the executive level conversations of how can our finance department steer us towards organizational success? How can our marketing steer us towards organizational success? But we don't have those same conversations for human resources.
Yeah.
We say, how can human resources steer our people in the door, make sure people aren't complaining about pay? And so it's a larger conversation, but that's what I'd say for right now.
And that is Joey Price, CEO of Jumpstart HR. Unfair to give you that little amount of time. Marie Mitchell is professor at UGA's Terry College of Business, and also Erica Clemens, Georgia State Director of 9to5. Thanks so much to all three of you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
You can get more information at our website, gpbnews.org.